yahoo.com. Now, Amy, you know, we've been working together for 5 years now, and I have to tell you, since the show's inception, I've been very proud of the groundbreaking work that we've done on Democracy Now. And also, more importantly, as a longtime listener for more than 30 years to Pacifica radio programs, I understand the critical role the network has played in reporting important stories the corporate media ignored, and thus helping to shape a lot of the progressive thought and popular movements in the country. But unfortunately, I am resigning today, effective immediately, from Democracy Now, because I've decided that the current management situation at Pacifica has become intolerable. And despite my hope that the majority of the Pacifica Foundation's board of directors would come to its senses, the situation has only gotten worse, the last straw being the Christmas coup at this station, WBAI, last month. Quite simply, I've come to the conclusion that the Pacifica board has been hijacked by a small clique that has more in common with modern-day corporate vultures than with working-class America. That clique has illegally changed the foundation's bylaws, and during the past 2 years, it has methodically sought to squash dissent throughout the network, first at KPFA, then at PNN News, then at Democracy Now!, and now at WBAI. This group does not respect free speech. It does not respect labor or civil rights. It doesn't even practice due process for its own managers. And it's now seeking to radically alter Pacifica's bylaws to pave the way for the selling of one or more stations. Finally, Amy, I've got to tell you that the consistent attacks on you, the most important public face at Pacifica, has so poisoned the atmosphere at the network that it's becoming increasingly difficult for many people of conscience to continue working here. Amy, you're a wonderful and committed journalist, and you've been subjected to slanderous personal accusations and constant undermining of your efforts. And the board of Pacifica has tolerated and I think even encouraged this, and it's hypocritical of the board to continue to claim in its tape statements that it fully supports Amy Goodman when key managers routinely make your life miserable. This clique on the board insults Pacifica's loyal and sophisticated listeners by asking them to finance its shenanigans with their donations. Therefore, starting today, I will be joining other Pacifica listeners in a national corporate campaign that will not rest until every board member who has orchestrated this hijacking resigns and a new board is in place, a board that is democratically accountable to the network's listeners, to the communities of the stations of Pacifica, and to its staff.
Juan Gonzalez, former co-host of Democracy Now!, speaking last Wednesday on that program, broadcast nationally, except when it was taken off the air at Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, D.C. Good morning. I'm Larry Bensky, and this is Sunday Salon, heard every week at this time on KPFA from 9 to 11 a.m. Today, we're going to conduct 2-hour teach-in, as it were, about the Pacifica situation. We'll be talking to people who know the history of Pacifica, people who understand what is going on now, people from our local signal area, of course, here at KPFA, and people who have been involved in national programming, as I was until I was fired in 1998 by Lynn Chadwick and others. So all of this coming up this hour, but first let me introduce to you, and of course we'll be taking listener phone-ins in both of our hours this morning. The idea here today is to get at the current situation where the bylaws are proposed for revision by John Murdoch, the corporate attorney from the anti-union law firm Epstein, Becker & Green, who was Mary Frances Berry's hand-picked legal mouth, I guess you could say, or spokesperson on the Pacifica National Board. Mr. Murdoch has now written a 21-page series of proposed bylaws which would radically alter the structure and permit the mission of Pacifica to be radically altered as well. It would also permit the sale with very little input from board members of either of the two stations or indeed any of the stations as long as substantially all of the assets of Pacifica weren't sold. It allows for dismissal of board members on little input or discussion. It allows for quick board meetings to be held without due notice. It allows for all kinds of things. And if this set of bylaws is passed at the upcoming Pacifica meeting in March or anything like it, You can kiss Pacifica as we've known it goodbye, and probably kiss this station, KPFA, goodbye, as it will be sold by people who can then, according to these new bylaws, profit themselves. That's right, the board of directors profit themselves by paying themselves for professional services and or giving grants to themselves or others under the new bylaws. This is the most serious emergency in the history of this organization, I believe, and we have two historians here, and I guess I'll get their opinion as to what they believe. First, let me introduce Sherry Gendelman, who's here in the station with me. Sherry has been, for the past 4 years, chair of the local advisory board and now continues in that post for a little while longer, as we have, of course, a new elected local advisory board, thanks to the cooperation of thousands of people who voted in the recent elections. Welcome once again to Sunday Salon, Sherry Gendelman.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be on these particular airwaves more than any others, and I appreciate the time that you're devoting to this crisis, which I think is truly the final crisis that we are facing, and hopefully we're going to survive this.
I hope we'll survive it and come out stronger for the experience. Ralph Engelman joins us on the telephone from New York, where he is a professor of journalism and chair of the journalism department. I still believe he's chair of the... Are you still chair of the journalism department, Ralph?
Yes.
Good. At Long Island University. Longtime supporter of Pacifica, a national board member from when to when, Ralph?
From 1973 to 1979.
And I remember meeting you then, because at that point I was station manager of KPFA, and at that point an ex officio member of the national board, so we met at many Pacifica board meetings, including a critical one where we decided to accept funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, as long as no strings were attached. Ralph Engelman is author, among other books, of Public Radio and Television in America, published by Sage Press, subtitled A Political History, the best, in my mind, a one-volume history of what public radio and television were supposed to become, and indeed have become, in this country. Ralph Engelman is joined on the telephone by Matthew Lazar, a former reporter here at KPFA News. Dr. Matthew Lazar is a historian, a specialist in United States history, now teaching at UC Riverside, author of the definitive so far book, Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, which took the history that he wrote, Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, took us up through the early 1970s, but a sequel is very much in order, and I hope it'll have a happy last chapter, but it doesn't look as if that's certain right now. Welcome, Matthew Lazar, once again to Sunday Salon.
Nice to be here again, Larry.
Ralph Engelman, let me start with you. Would you agree with my statement, which I readily admit is apocalyptic, that this is the most serious crisis to face Pacifica in its 51-year history?
I think it is, and keep in mind that we face many difficult crises and challenges, both external and internal, attacks by McCarthyite committees, stations like our Houston station being, you know, bombed by the Klan and all the rest, and our own divisions. But this crisis is one which is unique. We can't refer to it as just another Pacifica crisis, because whatever problems we had in the past and whatever our internal divisions were in the past, it seems that there was a general understanding or agreement on the fundamental mission of Pacifica as Lou Hill conceived it. And now this is simply not the case. And I think that Juan Gonzalez's term for a majority now on the board attempting to hijack Pacifica is apt.
Matthew Lazar, would you agree that this is the greatest crisis in the 51-year history of Pacifica?
I'm scared to death, Larry. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I think Ralph has put it very well. I think this is the this is zero hour for the organization. I think that if those bylaws go in, we're going to see the dismantling of this organization and the integrating of it into some kind of corporate public broadcasting situation that's already in place elsewhere.
Well, now, how did we get here, Ralph? You were on the board, as you said, since 1973, from 1973 and then mid-1970s, but you followed things very closely, I know, since then in New York. I've crossed paths with you a number of times at national broadcasting meetings and at other meetings, award meetings, etc. And I know you followed things very closely as far as the corporate structure goes, and you have too, Matthew Lazar. What went wrong that allowed the kind of people that are now on the board seeking to pass these bylaws, and by the way, they would seem to have a sufficient majority on the board right now to do so, what went wrong that allowed such people who are so radically different from the people devoted to peace and social justice like yourself, who used to be on the board and not devoted to personal gain and things like that, what allowed them to get on the board? How did this happen?
Well, I would say the essential factor was a breakdown of what you might call the sort of the federal system of Pacifica that existed at least up until the time I was on the national board, and well into the 80s as well, where although the national board was ultimately a self-perpetuating board and under communications law has great, not absolute, but great authority over the licenses and the whole institution, that national board members really came up through the ranks, through the local signal areas, through the local boards. And I think that one of the key factors was the weakening of the local boards, we can get into the details there if you like. And I think the other factor would be a changed relationship with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and mainstream public broadcasting, the Pacifica leadership, the Pat Scott, Lynn Chadwick, and others. I think looked rather than maintaining a sort of sense of Pacifica's sort of distinct character, separate from those institutions, began looking to mainstream public broadcasting for guidance and kind of for a model of where we go from here.
Matthew Lazar, would you agree with that?
Larry, I think that the reason that those people are there is because we let them in there. I think that in the 1980s, the Pacifica Radio Network went through a period of demoralization, largely because it had been contained. While the Pacifica Foundation radio stations continued to be community radio stations for huge big signal areas, most local access public and even commercial radio was disappearing. It was disappearing in the public broadcasting realm. It was disappearing because of the end of the Fairness Doctrine. It was disappearing because of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It was disappearing because of the way the Federal Communications Commission was reorganizing licenses. And the result was is that the Pacifica Foundation radio network became more and more people with less and less places to go. And in that context, what I saw was many board members, many staff, many people become demoralized with more democratic as opposed to less democratic systems of governance. We fell asleep at the wheel, and we let people onto the national board who have no commitment at all to community-based radio, and they got more people in through the back door. And now we're where we are right now.
Well, I have to agree with that analysis on both your parts as somebody who's been around this organization since 1969 myself, and who, as I said before, served as station manager and an ex officio member of the National Board in the mid-1970s when I was station manager here from 74 through 77. But still, it comes as a shock to listeners, I think, when they look at these bylaws and they see what is obviously going on right now, which is, as Juan Gonzalez said, a hijacking of the organization, that something like this could be going on in an organization where so many of us are still involved, are still on the air, were still on the air, I should say, because there's been so many purges and demoralizations and people who've left in the last couple of years. But this was going on our watch, in a sense, and we weren't watching. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, I'm as guilty as anyone here. I thought that the programming I was doing and was involved in, the national programming that began big time for me in 1987 with the Iran-Contra hearings, was my contribution, and it was something that took me, 24/7. I didn't have time to go to national board meetings. I didn't have time to read their minutes. I didn't even have time to know who was on the national board. Because, as usual, Pacifica broadcasters, when we're doing our job properly, are overcommitted, we're understaffed, we're underfunded. And who has time to fool around with all that other stuff? And all of a sudden, all that other stuff boiled up around us and now threatens to engulf us and drown us. My particular question about all of this, though, is how it came to a head in the last couple of years so that a person like Mary Frances Berry, who looked great on her resume, could take over this board in an authoritarian way and see to it that a majority of people who the present majority got on the board and was able to get away with it still. Ralph Engelman, did you see any warning bells going on with Mary Frances Berry? What sort of triggered your alarm? It certainly didn't happen a few weeks ago when these proposed bylaws were first posted.
Well, you know, again, I think that one of the things that was fundamental here was the sort of assault on the local boards, and the fact that, while I agree that with Matthew we were asleep at the watch, and some of the people like Michael Palmer, the current treasurer, who has been leading the charge for selling stations, slipped in under sort of the old system, that there was an attempt, you know, by Pat Scott and others to address some real problems at the stations, but with a level of overkill that ultimately threatens the whole institution, to weaken the local boards, which were essentially a mechanism through which local people, local activists who were concerned about the local stations became involved and then made their way up. Now, with the assault on the local boards, one part of that story was the accepting at face value or really soliciting from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, you know, an opinion that local board members cannot serve on the national board. I think that was, you know, one of the steps. So that, and then you had, in addition, to further create a sort of top-down board that was less accountable to the stations, to even the geographical areas where they were located, you had so-called at-large members being put on the board, some of whom lived in Atlanta or couldn't even listen, at least directly, not talking about listening on through the web, to the station. So that, and then you have someone like Mary Frances Berry coming on the board, who had no history with Pacifica, you know, who had not gone, did not go through a process of involvement on the local level, in her case with PFW in Washington. So you had the development of a board that was, you know, sort of disconnected from the life of the stations, and that opened up all these possibilities. And then there's, of course, the question of the source that you have in Mary Frances Berry, someone very much linked to Washington politics. She's a Democratic Leadership Council centrist, a Democrat. Historically, the essence of Pacifica was to our sense of not being involved, being a watchdog of government, and not being involved with government. Unlike National Public Radio, you know, whose current president and many of the officials have a long history of being involved with Voice of America, USIA, and the rest. So I think the very fact that you have someone like Mary Frances Berry coming on the national board should have been clear that there was a problem at hand. And then on the other board members, many of them are entrepreneurs, but conditions were established which made it possible for someone like Mary Frances Berry to pack the board. And I believe that although she is no longer officially a member of the board, but as a consultant, is still driving this process. The one thing I'll say, and you began by emphasizing, the seriousness of this situation. I think it is terribly serious. I don't think it is without hope. I know it's something that an issue that Sherry has addressed and may address, you know, later on. There is a national community of listeners, of staff members, of people in all walks of life who are determined to keep, to not let this be the final denouement. And we have, you know, three major lawsuits, a listener lawsuit, a local advisory board lawsuit, and a lawsuit from within the belly of the beast, from dissident national board members themselves, seeking to right this ship. And there's tremendous amount of support, including the financial support, and more financial support will be needed.
All right, Ralph, I'm going to have to let you go now because Leslie Kagan, who's a national board member from New York, is waiting to get on, and technically here we can only put two people on at once, but I want to thank you very much for your past and continuing work on this, and we'll be getting back to you in the future, I hope.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you.
Ralph Engelman is chair of the Journalism Department at Long Island University in New York and author of Public Radio and Television in America, A Political History. And joining us at this time in the studio, in addition to Sherry Gendelman, is Nicole Sawaya. Don't worry, both of you are going to get to talk plenty. I just wanted to get Ralph and Matthew in here. Nicole Sawaya, who is a former station manager here at KPFA, came in the heart of the storm, hired at a time when she could not possibly know Pacifica was going to go through this dreadful crisis that has now come to near denouement in these proposed bylaws, which would change the organization entirely. Nicole, as you look back on this, what do you think and when do you think things got to, and why do you think things got to the point where the entire organization basically started falling off the rails?
Good morning, Larry. Good morning. You ask such big questions.
Well, you're a big gal.
Oh, yeah. Again, good morning, listeners, too. You know, Larry, first of all, in looking back, I think that Pacifica was, for many years, chronically mismanaged. And when I say that, it means that it was a club. It was the Pacifica Club. And financially, it had been mismanaged always. The station, KPFA, was the healthiest station with regard to its finances. The others were in and out of deficit all the time, from what I could tell during my short tenure, only 18 months, in Pacifica. I think that there was leadership issues. It was a fiefdom and treated that way. People brought other staff on because they were friends or whatnot, not because they were the best for the job. So you had a situation that was, as I said, chronic, and was poised to go into the kind of spiral that it's going in now, where it basically cannibalizes itself. Also, I think that the escalation in value of the frequencies, we cannot overlook this. I don't think this is the first time that a frequency has been put up for sale. I think that this was a discussion probably in the late 80s even. About, again, because the organization was chronically financially mismanaged, there was always that out, and money is money, and money is very attractive. And with the Telecommunications Act, those frequencies escalated in value, especially the two commercial frequencies. When you look at a frequency like WBAI that has the potential to reach 12 million people and has 225,000 listeners. Yes, you can make the argument, but those are the dedicated few, and we have to have those 225,000 listeners. But, you know, there's some holes in that argument. 12 million as opposed to 220. What was being done wrong? What could have been fixed rather than going to the extreme of let's unload it, we endow the place forever, and then we can do something else with programming.
We should explain to listeners who aren't really up to speed on this, which is, I suppose, most people. And by the way, if you're not, the place to go for full information about the history of what we're talking about here in the background and the nature of the present crisis and what you can do about it is www.savepacifica.net. That's www.savepacifica.net. But we should explain the one detail very important that Nicole Sawaya just brought up, and that is that when this station was started, KPFA, in 1949, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, basically gave it to the people who'd worked 4 or 5 years trying to get the station on the air because they wanted an AM frequency. At that time, there were very few FM radios, only one other FM station on the dial, KALW, in San Francisco at the time. So they gave KPFA as a kind of a consolation prize this FM frequency, which is at 94.1 FM. Then, many decades later, they split up the dial so that non-commercial stations basically are between 88 and 92, and commercial frequencies are 92 to 107. So that when your grandfathered, as this station is in a WBAI in New York, which was also donated to the Pacifica Foundation, because it wasn't worth anything at the time by a benefactor in New York, these stations, because of the economics of scarcity and radio frequencies, being on the commercial dial became worth much, much more money. And even in the mid-70s, when I was station manager, I was approached by a broker who said, how would you like to sell KPFA and we'll get you another frequency on the non-commercial band? And I said, we could discuss it as long as the non-commercial one has similar coverage. Well, of course, there was no such animal, so it never went any further. But these two stations right now, as Nicole was saying, WBAI is probably worth something like $150 million, KPFA $100 million. Then you get a board of directors in there, like the one that Mary Frances Berry started putting in and did put in, which looks at $250 million, and sales commissions gleam in their eyes. And
10%.
And, professional fees gleam in their eyes for doing this and that, and grant money that they could get, as Nicole said, if this was set up as an endowment, gleam in their eyes. And what doesn't gleam in their eyes is the mission of the organization, which is to promote peace and social justice through alternative voices on the air. What do they care about that? Alternative voices? Come on, sell it. Maybe we'll have a foundation, or once a week we'll have a forum with alternative voices on it. Leslie Kagan joins us now from New York. She was a recently appointed national board member. The game that Mary Frances Berry and her ilk played was really quite interesting when you look at it, when I look at it. Every time they put two or three of their cronies on the board, the two of their three of their cronies tended to be people of color, especially African Americans. And at the same time, they put one person on the board, or maybe two, who were white people. And then, in order to play this game of racial divisiveness, which Mary Frances Berry excels at, she would say, if you criticized it, aha, you're a racist. You don't like colored people. Look at us up here. We're all black. And you folks out there, you dissenters on the board, you're white. Leslie Kagan, into this you stepped. As a person who was certainly knowledgeable in the ways of organizations, I knew you many years ago when you were still a college student and I was still living in New York. That's how many years ago it was. And I was working on something called the Fifth Avenue Vietnam Peace Parade Committee. Remember that?
Of course, yes.
And since then, you've been a tireless campaigner and organizer. You've worked on Vietnam campaigns. You've worked on civil rights campaigns. You've worked on gay and lesbian campaigns. And here you are, approached to be on the Pacifica board, and you probably thought, yeah, I can do some good there. Did you have any clues to the dynamics of what you were getting into?
Well, yes, actually I did. Obviously I didn't have a crystal ball. I didn't know exactly how things would unfold. But I've been a listener of WBAI here in New York for many, many years. I actually was on the local advisory board from 1987 to 1990. And so have followed, what's been going on at Pacifica, not necessarily all the gory details, but have certainly been following developments since 95 and 96. And I did have some sense. And in fact, when I was approached by people here in New York from the local advisory board who were going through a process of trying to find people that they wanted to nominate, obviously the whole process of being put onto the national board had already changed, but the local advisory board was interested in nominating some people last spring, and I was asked, and I thought about it. I didn't, quickly jump into it and say, yes, here's a chance for me to just go in there and clean up this mess. By any means, by no means did I have that kind of approach to this. I decided to do it because I do believe that this institution, that is the Pacifica Network, and not only the five stations but the affiliates as well, is a critically important institution. It's important in and of itself, but it's also important as part of a progressive activist social change movement in this country.
And having seen that and having come in with that belief, what do you now think as you see these proposed bylaws come in, the dismantlement, the effective dismantlement of national programming with the strike by reporters against the Pacifica Network News, which has left that newscast a ghost of its former self, and the constant harassment of Amy Goodman in Democracy Now!, the firing of me and the dismantling of national live programming from Washington. All of this would seem to indicate that the people in power now didn't share your agenda and don't share it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that while I knew there were problems, it wasn't until my first board meeting last June when I really got a taste firsthand about how serious this was. And the lack of any kind of democratic process within the board itself, even at the board meetings, was a clue that this struggle to turn around the direction that the present, quote, leadership of National Pacifica is taking the network, without that fight to democratize the institution, it would be very, very difficult to turn around these policies and programs that they were setting into place.
And now we've had a start in that democratization, of course, here, Sherry Gendelman, by electing the first local advisory board that's ever been elected in the history of Pacifica. It was our understanding, and I believe that of the other progressive board members, and there are six of them, that this might be a start towards electing eventually our national board as well, which would be a measure of democracy introduced into the organization. When you read these new bylaws, one of the little things in them is that the national board would appoint a third of the local boards.
Right. I think that we're mixing apples and oranges a little bit. I do think that the election of the local advisory board here in the Berkeley community certainly was a reflection of how involved this community has been in this station and its profound concern both for KPFA and for the network. I have voiced these opinions before. I think that a fully elected board on a national level does not necessarily serve nor protect the underlying mission of Pacifica, but I do think that the notion of democracy can also be translated into the notion of accountability. And what we had up until the mid-90s, at least, was a governing board that was accountable because each local advisory board selected and elected two representatives to then go sit, and those representatives were a majority of the national board. If you have an election, you don't necessarily get people who are both progressive and savvy in terms of media. I mean, an election didn't bring us a Nicole Sawaya or someone with that level of proficiency in radio. And I think that we should always be cautious that democracy can become rhetoric, and what we really want is a well-informed, politically progressive board that which is dedicated to protecting and promoting the mission of Pacifica. I want to mention right now that we do have six stalwarts on the national board, as you have mentioned, in addition to Leslie, and she has been a wonderful addition to this governing board. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
We have Pete Bramson, Tomas Moran, Beth Lyons, who came on the board at the same time as Leslie did, and then Aaron Kriegel and Rob Robinson, who have also fought the good fight, and who are two of the members of the governing board who have filed a director's suit questioning all of the policies that we are here to question.
Well, let me ask you something, Leslie. In the emails that have been going around fast and furious and the campaigns to try to stop these bylaws, which would essentially dismantle Pacifica as we've known it, they have been asking people to contact these six pro-community radio directors, one of whom is yourself, with comments about these bylaws. Have you received much feedback so far?
Yes. Actually, we've been flooded with emails, many of which are just kind of general statements, you know, please stop these bylaws, but also many are quite detailed, you know, Article 3, Section 4, blah, blah, blah. So we really do appreciate all this feedback. I'm a little concerned, though, that not enough direct feedback is going to the other board members. We already are opposed, that is, a group of six of us already are quite clear that we are opposed to these bylaws and do whatever we can as members of the board to make sure that they don't go into effect.
Well, but John Murdoch says in his cover note to the new bylaws that you, as a board member, have until February 8th to communicate your comments in writing, and that all I don't know if he states it here, but he implies that he's not going to pay any attention to things that don't come through you board members.
Right.
So I think
right.
That's why you're getting them.
There are two things here. One is that I have made it quite clear, certainly to folks here in New York and to anybody who's listening, that I am more than willing to pass along whatever I get from people. Since that was the way he laid it out, that's fine.
He says here, I strongly urge all members of the board to cast widely for comments and suggestions on the bylaws. So that's what you're doing right now, casting
right.
widely.
And those comments and suggestions have been coming in, and I plan to just make copies of things that people have sent and send them along with my own comments.
Leslie.
But in addition, I think it's important that other people on the board hear from folks, if not in great detail, at least in a general way, that there's a large community of people around this country who are very strongly opposed to these bylaws.
Yeah, Leslie, I think in the past, however, Mr. Murdoch and the people that surround him on the board, and prior to that, Mary Barry, who I understand is still playing a very active role in all of this, have ignored almost totally our concerns, even your phone calls, your requests for a dialogue on this issue. And I would urge our listeners then, if you have friends who are outside the activist community or friends who have, in addition to those people who have been active around the fight to save Pacifica, that you have those people who may, in fact, be members, heaven forbid, of the Democratic Party or bankers or whatever, and have those people contact the board members such as Murdoch, Palmer, Acosta, and let them know that people, not just within the radical community or the progressive community in America, but people in other communities who have progressive ideas are terribly concerned about what's happening.
Well, and once again, to find out what's in these bylaws, and indeed to read them all for yourself, and I would urge any of you who have the time and the expertise, and not even expertise, just the time, to read the bylaws. There are comments on them. There are criticism of them on the website. But, you know, don't take our word for it. Read it yourself. And you see if they don't say that the board of directors can enrich itself and its cronies. And you see if they don't say that they can change the bylaws and the mission statement of the organization at will. Very interesting comment came just this morning. I got on email from Peter Frank, an attorney who's been very active in this struggle, former chair of the board back in the 70s, saying that he notices that a bare majority of a quorum, which could be seven or less, could completely amend the bylaws. So it doesn't matter what the rest of the document says. And he also points out that they could also change the Articles of Incorporation to change the purpose of Pacifica to whatever they choose it to be. So these bylaws are really a poison pill that will completely destroy the organization if anything like them is passed. www.savepacifica.net is where you can read about them. www.savepacifica.net. And you only have until February 8th, which is next Friday, to formally submit your comments. It gives the email addresses of Leslie Kagan and the other board members who are opposed to these bylaws. Leslie, it's my understanding, and of course Pacifica hasn't operated according to its bylaws, which is the subject of one of the lawsuits against them so far, but it's my understanding that they have a majority of, is it 12 or 13 to 6 right now? They were very careful as they appointed you and other dissidents to the board to preserve a majority that would back Mary Frances Berry and others. Therefore, they could pass these bylaws if they cared to in March, couldn't they?
Well, they have a majority. There are actually 17 people on the board now. When Mary Frances Berry's term was up at the end of September, she did step down, so that made it 17. And there are six of us who are part of this dissident group. They do have a majority, but the present bylaws read that they need two-thirds to make bylaw amendments and changes in the bylaws. And I'm not sure, actually, how two-thirds of 17 is counted. But by my interpretation, they don't have two-thirds.
But could they not nominate, as they have in the past, new board members right then and there and have those board members vote?
Yes.
And elect them and have those board members vote?
Of course. They might very well try that, although it might be a little bit difficult because at the September board meeting, a process was laid out to begin the search for new possible board members. And there was agreement, I'm not saying they'll abide by this agreement, but there was an agreement that there would be a process that included interviews and, you know, discussions with potential new board members. None of that has happened. So that just on that issue alone, we might have some grounds to suggest and to argue that, in fact, they can't bring on new people at this board meeting. Maybe they can nominate people, but they can't seat people at this meeting. Again, whether or not we'll win, I don't know.
Sherry Gendelman, and all this, by the way, we're going to open our phones now if you'd like to comment or question any of what we're discussing here. Matthew Lazar, are you still there?
I'm still here.
I want to give you one final word because we're going to say goodbye to you as we open the phones at 510-848-4425. Anything you're hearing right now change any of your historian's impressions that you began with?
Well, I just want to say that I feel very strongly that one of the problems that we're having at this moment is that we have a situation in which the national board and the staff of the various of the stations are able to collaborate on further centralizing and centralizing the organization. When the national board has needed and the national office has needed people to do its dirty work, it's been able to pick and choose among various staff at the various stations to do that, be it Garland Ganter coming here and shutting this radio station down, or the staff at WBAI executing the Christmas coup there has to be a third force within this organization now that can put a check on those kind of alliances. And I believe that that is the listeners. I believe that there needs to be, although I agree with Sherry that direct election of the national board by listeners would be a mistake, I do believe that the listeners need to vote for local advisory board members, some or all, and that those local advisory board members need to sit on the national board. The listeners need to have a formal presence in this organization's governance so that something like this can never happen again.
Thank you, Matthew Lasar, author of Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, published by Temple University Press, now available in paperback. 510-848-4425. What did you want to say, Sherry?
I wanted to say goodbye, Matthew, and thank you always for your critical and wonderful political commentary on this particular crisis.
And Bill in Berkeley is our first caller, but just let me say before Bill that the listeners participating in this, obviously we need as many people as possible to read these bylaws or read comments on them and send commentary on email to our board members so that they can be represented. We also need a massive political campaign right now, folks. Some of us have been calling behind the scenes to legislators and to members of Congress, and they're not going to move until they're pushed. They're politicians. That's the way they behave. If you live in the district that's listening to KPFA right now and you know your state assembly person's name, call him or her on Monday and say, do you know what's about to happen to a California incorporated nonprofit organization, Pacifica Radio? Now, especially if you live in the district of Fred Keeley, who is the assembly member from Santa Cruz, he is now chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the same committee that did the audit under Scott Wildman 2 years ago that helped us tremendously in getting the Attorney General on our side. If you live in Assemblyman Keeley's district, please call his office on Monday and urge that he take a look at these bylaws and re-energize the audit committee to get started looking at this again. Because unless these people, I don't care who they are, in our own signal area, Dion Ariner, call her office. Don Parada, call his office. Barbara Lee, call her office. They have been active with us in the past. If they hear from listeners, perhaps they'll get active in the future. We need them on our side.
Larry, I just wanted to jump in. This is Nicole, and as somebody who is on the outside, now, this may not be pleasant for people to hear, but I think you run the risk of some compassion fatigue. This is, especially by listeners, this has been going on for a long time. There's a lot of mixed messages that come out over the air. You pledge, you don't pledge, you give money, you don't give money. Yeah, some of it goes to Pacifica, some of it doesn't. So for the ordinary listener who may not be totally well briefed on all the nuance around Pacifica, and there's a lot of those people, there's a tune out factor, and there's also some cognitive dissonance that happens, and there's compassion fatigue. So I agree with you. I think what you need now is some real strategy of some heavy hitters. You really have to line up people that can make a difference, people either at the legislative level, at the political level, even at the movie star level, if that's what it takes. Because people with influence that can come out and say a few simple words that's going to make these people lose face, because it's about losing face. And it's about having the public opinion on your side or not.
I wonder how much they care when they sit there, as you started to point out before, and as I followed up on, looking at the profit that they can get from $250 million. What do they care about face? These are the kind of people that always operate facelessly behind the scenes of law firms and other corporations and laugh all the way to the plantation in Aruba.
It's true. I don't think that anything will necessarily influence the greed of someone like John Murdoch. However, it not only it builds our strength in support of our lawsuits, it expands our community. If we once again reconnect our legislators, I also urge people to write to your local newspapers. I also ask everyone out there to send us the names of all of the groups over the last year, in fact, the last 50 years, whether they're political, cultural, grassroots, health, etc. We want to compile a profile so that we can, in fact, urge those groups who have been on the sidelines, just benefiting from the use of our airwaves, to begin to put pressure and join us in this. If we don't network now, the network goes down, folks.
And the place to send that, those comments, and if you are one of those groups or organizations, is savepacifica@peacenet.org. That's savepacifica@peacenet.org. Bill, thank you very much for your patience. Thanks for joining us on Sunday Salon.
Yes, good morning. I was calling in because I was at that meeting where Mary Frances Berry was hired, and Pat Scott, of course, was the one that engineered that. I'm sorry that Matthew Lazard went off the phone, because I wanted to ask him if it's true. I think Pat Scott's previous job to that was as personnel manager of the Berkeley Co-op.
She had something to do with the co-op. I don't know if it was personnel.
Yeah, well, it would be in character. And I think that people should refer to the remarks that Lawrence Ferlinghetti made at that meeting. He spoke in extended remarks. People yielded time to him. And he not only denounced Pat Scott and the course she was taking, but he laid that whole thing out. This was at a time that he was Poet Laureate of San Francisco, and he was certainly eloquent on that occasion. And I want to remind you that what Pat Scott did was to heavily indebt KPFA, the local station, by building the new fortress building. It used to be this collection of honeycombs, catacombs above an ice cream parlor, where it absolutely needed a volunteer staff because the station was not automated, the transmitter was not automated.
Bill, I don't think you're correct about this, and I have to disagree with you here about
this. Hold on, don't cut me off yet. They put the new transmitter in the base of the building, and then they had to pay for it. And Sherry Gilderman couldn't be more wrong when she says that we don't need elections. She's fought us for 6 years. The Safe KPFA organization finally got enough pressure put on so the local advisory boards are now elected, and that's our greatest strength.
They are not law elected. This is the only one that's been locally elected.
Exactly,
so far.
And we need to do that at the national
level. I agree with you, but let me go back, and your point is well taken about elections. But, Bill, you're wrong about the economics, because as a former station manager, as a former chair of the finance committee of the local advisory board, and as somebody who's watched this throughout, I can tell you that this building actually saves us money, what Pat Scott and others did in building it, rather than costs us money. There was no way we were going to be able to keep in repair and pay the ever-escalating rents on that nasty little office we had downtown. We now own this land, we own this building, we own the buildings next to it, and the costs of paying off that mortgage are less than what it would cost us somewhere else. Now, the irony is, of course, we've now created an asset that Pacifica can sell if they pass these bylaws. They can not only sell the stations, they could sell the new beautiful KPFA building, which is 10 years old now, and realize probably $3 or $4 million from it, Nicole.
Yeah, Larry, more depressing news. I did do a title search at one time, and the title on this property is in Pacifica Foundation.
Right.
And I was not even a DBA of KPFA.
I just want to correct whatever Bill said there. I never said I was opposed to elections. I said that I was opposed to electing entirely the either the local advisory board or the national board. I think that the elections are great, and that to the degree that our community elects representatives that it is comfortable with and that it trusts and who have run on an open and fair campaign is a wonderful accomplishment.
Let's go to Doug in Fremont. Hi, Doug. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I took the advice of the people that were saying on the air to call in Epstein, Becker, and Green, and I actually got through to John Murdoch.
And what was your conversation like?
Well, I told him about our concern about being able to sell substantially, all but substantially, all of the assets. And he set up an equivalence with me that said he considers any one station to be essentially all, and he would oppose the selling of any station.
And why doesn't he write that into the bylaws?
I ask him that, and every time I ask him something, he'd say, this is only a draft, you can send in comments, we'll take them into consideration.
You know, these are the proposed revisions to the bylaws. I've spoken to several other lawyers on this, and I almost didn't have to finish a description of it to many of them. They say that these proposed revisions are the same types of bylaws that corporations propose when they try to marginalize dissident shareholders, and that they're very commercial and very savvy in how they would marginalize people who oppose what they're doing. So Mr. Murdoch speaks out of several sides of his mouth.
I agree. He was very court.
Oh, no.
I told him there's a great deal of concern about this being on fast track for the next board meeting. He said to me, he said, now you've read the bylaws. I assume you read my cover letter. And I said, yes. He says, now where is it in the cover letter that I said anything about the next board meeting? And he said, well, this is a rhetorical question because it's not there. He says, there is no way we can get this done, you know, in the next month. Now, you know, I don't know if I believe him or not.
Well, don't.
Well, he sets up a calendar here in the cover letter saying 20th distribution, February 8th, comments, February 13th, distributing of comments, February 15th, the Board Governance Committee will confer to discuss next steps in the development of bylaw revisions. Why are they going all through this with a deadline of 2 weeks before the meeting if they're not going to propose it at the meeting? Come on.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just reporting what he told me.
Leslie Kagan, you had something to say about that?
Yeah, let me just jump in on this also. He has indicated to the board, to the rest of us on the board, that he, anyway, is open to revising the timeline. He still wanted the first, set of comments and feedback to come in on February 8th. The governance committee will be meeting by conference call, I believe sometime at the end of next week, at the end of this coming week. And as I understand it, this issue of the timeline on the bylaws is on their agenda. They will be discussing this. So there is some possibility that, that there won't be full action on the bylaws at the March meeting.
Yeah, but
the word of caution that I also believe that these people pull all kinds of tricks out of all kinds of hats, and we have to be vigilant, and we don't really know what they're going to propose at the March meeting.
Well, but look at this too, Leslie Kagan. That's Leslie Kagan, by the way, a board member in support of Free Speech Community Radio from WBAI New York, a national board member. Joining us here on Sunday Salon, where we'll be taking your phone calls for the next few minutes, and we're going to go with Leslie Kagan to other people in New York, talk about the situation at WBAI there, which is very important. But look at this. Let's say they don't vote on the bylaws this time. What is happening to this organization? You've got a badly split situation in New York. You've got a completely demoralized and almost out-of-power national organization. You've got a newscast that isn't worth carrying that a lot of stations want to drop and nobody pays attention to anymore. You've got our only remaining national programming under constant harassment and censorship, really. And you've got the fundraising capability of the organization is going to be seriously crippled, I think, by this campaign that Juan Gonzalez announced in resigning the new campaign that he's announced where he says they want to defund Pacifica and stop the national board. That's at www.pacificacampaign.org. The organization is going to be hemorrhaging money. How much longer listeners at KPFA are going to continue, as Nicole said, to get this mixed message and continue to respond magnificently, which they have ever since the crisis? I don't know, because I get calls all the time. What should I do? Should I pledge more money? Where do I donate money to the lawsuits? And I say, I'm agnostic on this question. You're an intelligent person. Make your own decisions. Go on the website. Figure it out. People are going to figure it out, but at some point they're just going to figure out, I'm not going to donate any more money to this in a place like New York or in a place like Los Angeles, which is in terrible trouble. So, Leslie Kagan, if they postpone the consideration of these bylaws, they have consciously or unconsciously set into effect a dynamic where the organization is falling apart, and then they can say, aha, the organization fell apart. We've got to change everything. Am I wrong there?
No, I agree with you. That is one possible scenario. As I said, we don't know. I think to our credit, our minds don't function the same way theirs do. So we don't know what tricks they're going to pull out of the hat and what maneuvers they're going to do. And so they, even though he has indicated, that is, John Murdoch has indicated an openness to revise the timeline, as I just said before, I don't really know what they're going to bring to the table at the March meeting. I think we do have to be vigilant and be prepared to fight any attempt to push through these new bylaws or sections of them or whatever. But I don't know for sure that that's going to happen at the March meeting.
Well, if it doesn't happen and they postpone it till June, what have we got left? If it doesn't happen in March and we wait till June, what are we then looking at as far as Pacifica?
I also, as I was about to say, I agree with you that regardless of what happens with the bylaws, even if the bylaws don't change, incredible damage is being done by the present, again, quote, leadership, by the people in charge, not only the leadership of the national board, but also, I would say, by the present executive director of Pacifica. Damage is being done at individual stations and throughout the network, and we have to fight each one of those instances Regardless of what goes on with the bylaws just make it more complicated and more serious, but it doesn't detract from the other fights that have to be waged.
Mark in San Rafael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call. It's a wonderful open discussion. It's a great journalism, let me put it that way. I have a couple points. Obviously, we need to work to stop this board problem, but I think more on a local level, there's a couple fallback positions we need to create as listeners. Most notably, we need to create a volunteer group that's going to physically protect the transmitter 24/7 and the station. Obviously, nine-tenths of the law is possession. That being said, we also need to look at other end runs around this legal problem, possibly something like the city of Berkeley or other local municipalities creating eminent domain over the KPFA assets and deeding them permanently to the listenership, which would effectively render any of the bylaw changes useless, because obviously if we control it and it's no longer an asset of Pacifica, it can't be sold out from under us.
I love the idea. I don't think we can eminent domain a federal license, a frequency license, but I wish that we could.
By the way, let me talk to this listener and other people who may be in the North Bay. There's a KPFA Bay Area-wide support group meeting tonight in San Anselmo. Now, in practice, I don't think probably very many people are going to be coming from San Jose, but certainly people who live in the North Bay and maybe San Francisco can get to San Anselmo. 6 o'clock tonight at the offices of the Social Justice Center of Marin. That's at 1000 Sir Francis Drake, room 18 in San Anselmo. 6 o'clock tonight. If you want more information, call Wendy at 415-454-5470. That's 415-454-5470. Yes, Nicole.
Sherry, you know, it may be impossible, eminent domain, but what I like about the caller's thought patterns is that, and this is a really hackneyed phrase, but he's thinking out of the box.
Absolutely.
And that's what I haven't seen. I haven't seen the kind of dual strategies or triple strategies, if you will, where people think out of the box. There's
Absolutely.
Local management agreements. There might have been a window at one point where KPFA could have gone to the powers of Via Pacifica and asked for that local management agreement. I mean, how do we know, you know, what will work and what won't?
I think that's right. Cool
to think, yeah, you have to think in terms of the parameters that we operate under, but one should also think outside the box.
This is KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley. This is Sunday Salon. I'm Larry Bensky, and obviously we're talking about the continuing Pacifica crisis. In case you tuned in late, in a minute or two, we're going to be going back to New York. Leslie Kagan, we want to thank you for joining us this morning and wish you courage in your continued efforts. Leslie Kagan's email, by the way, is lesliekagan@igc.org. Is that correct? I think she's gone. LESLIECAGAN@igc.org. But all the emails of all the board members, the 6 who are on the side of Free Speech Community Radio and the 11 or so who aren't, are contained on the website www.savepacifica.net. We'll be back, and we'll be moving to a discussion of WBAI. Stay tuned. More listener phone-ins in our next hour here on Sunday Salon.